This podcast was specifically created for Distress and Crisis Ontario organizations and their volunteer responders to provide training and educational assistance on a variety of topics. As information evolves and changes, these podcasts are meant to offer ongoing support with the goal of updating them on an ongoing basis. We thank the volunteer responders and the contributors to this podcast. Please visit our website, dcontario.org, for more information and how to access free mental health services. Thank you.
And I am the program manager at Distress and Crisis Ontario. Thank you for choosing to listen to our podcast. We are glad to have you for another episode of the DCO Discourse podcast. Today, I am joined by my co-host, co-worker, communication and marketing manager extraordinaire, Caitlin Doyle. And we are going to share some information that we put together for a recent webinar that we hosted for some of our member centers. And it's on the topic of gender-based violence. So before we jump into today's podcast, I just want to give a little bit of a content warning that the things we will be talking about are very heavy. There are some very distressing statistics that we're going to be sharing. And of course, talking about gender-based violence can have a very big impact on people who are listening if they've ever experienced it or if they know somebody who has experienced it. So please, as always, whenever we're talking about difficult topics, take care of yourself first. If you need to pause the podcast, walk away and come back to it another time, do that. If you need to skip this week's podcast because it's not something that you think you can listen to, please make that choice, whatever is best for you. We are definitely going to be sharing some pretty distressing information and we don't want you to come into that blindly. So without further ado, I will let Caitlin take it away.
Wonderful. Thank you for the introduction there and for the content warning. I think that's really important when we're talking about things like this. So first off, what is gender-based violence? So according to the Canadian Women's Foundation, gender-based violence, or GBV, can be defined as, quote, the types of abuse that women, girls, and two-spirit, trans, and non-binary people are at highest risk of experiencing. It can take physical and emotional forms such as name-calling, hitting, pushing, blocking, stalking, and criminal harassment, rape, sexual assault, control, and manipulation. Many forms of this abuse are against the law. End quote. So, of course, gender-based violence is not specifically related to women and girls. It can happen to everyone, but women, girls, gender diverse individuals are at the highest risk of experiencing violence due to their gender identity. Of course, women with disabilities, Indigenous women, racialized women, trans and non-binary women, or women who are homeless or underhoused are at even greater risk of experiencing gender-based violence due to increased discrimination and barriers faced by each of those populations. So intersectionality is super important to look at when we're referencing gender-based violence. If you have one or more of these characteristics to your person, then your risk of gender-based violence increases. So gender-based violence can happen between romantic partners, family members, colleagues, friends, acquaintances, and strangers. And many of us know this, but most often this is something that occurs in private between people who know each other. So they've gained trust and are able to coerce or manipulate where they are abusing. So Women and Gender Equality Canada shares that, quote, while violence affects all people, some people are more at risk of experiencing violence because of various forms of oppression, such as racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, and ableism. Certain populations experience high levels of violence, including women, young women and girls, Indigenous women and girls, LGBTQ+, and gender diverse individuals, women living in northern, rural, and remote communities, and women living with disabilities. The intersection of any two or more risk factors may increase a person's risk and vulnerability to violence. End quote. So, of course, we've shared, I think there's three definitions here, and each definition has a ton of little pockets of what it could mean to be experiencing gender-based violence. But we think that it's such a broad topic that there must be so many definitions because it's unique to each person. And of course, like this quote just shared, an intersectionality of any of these risk factors increases a person's risk to gender-based violence.
So why is this something that we're talking about? Of course, March hosts International Women's Day. If you listened to last week's episode, you know Caitlin and I had a wonderful conversation with our friend Sabrina, talking about why Women's Day is still an important thing, and gender-based violence is a huge part of that. According to the Canadian Femicide Observatory for Justice and Accountability, 184 women and girls were killed just in Canada in 2022 alone. Primarily, they were killed by men. That amounts to one woman or girl being killed every 48 hours just in Canada. Those are only Canada's numbers. So if we were looking at this problem globally, those numbers would be much higher. It's important to know that the impact of gender-based violence affects more than just the victims. Of course, victims' family members are going to be impacted by seeing what their loved ones are struggling with. Children who witness violence in the home are two times more likely to experience psychiatric disorders compared to children from non-violent homes. And gender-based violence can carry over into the workplace, whether that results in abuse happening at the workplace, whether it's difficulties maintaining work, or whether it's loss of a job completely. Oftentimes in a relationship where gender-based violence occurs, a key factor is control. And if someone is trying to control their partner, one of the ways they might do so is by not letting them leave the house. And it's really hard to get to your work if your partner is not letting you leave. And if you don't feel safe sharing what's going on with your employer, all they see is somebody not showing up. And if that results in you losing your job, then you also lose some of your financial independence, which just means that your partner therefore has even more control over you. And it's this vicious spiral that just causes more and more harm and loss. Additionally, according to Statistics Canada, quote, in 2018, 44% of women reported experiencing some form of psychological, physical, or sexual violence by an intimate partner in their lifetimes, end quote. And, quote, the proportion of women killed by a spouse of intimate partner is over 8 times greater than the proportion of men, end quote. So again, this is highlighting that while gender-based violence can happen to anyone, it is far more likely to happen to women and those who identify as a woman. The National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls further shares that Indigenous women and girls are 12 times more likely to be murdered or missing than any other women in Canada, and 16 times more likely than white women specifically, which is a rather staggering percentage. Keeping all of this in mind, we also need to acknowledge that gender-based violence tends to be underreported. So these numbers are likely much higher in reality than what we are sharing here.
So we are sharing also the hashtag call it femicide report from 2018 to 2022. I'm currently looking at a graphic which we'll share in our show notes that you can look at the full report and look at these numbers and the graphs yourselves. So what we're looking at right here is a map of Canada and the rate and number of women and girls killed involving a male accused person. So the geographic patterns, we see here that Nunavut, the Northern Territories, and Yukon had the highest rates of killings of women and girls involving male accused. Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Alberta, and Nova Scotia were also above the national average rate. So 45% of victims were killed in rural areas and small towns. And there are, of course, situational factors that also come into play here. So 76% of women and girls were killed in a private location, such as their own home, the home of the accused, or the home of that they share with the accused. 15% were killed in a public area, and 9% killed in unknown locations. So this is important to look at, I think, in Canada, because we do have so many rural communities, and trying to get support out there can be difficult sometimes. Oftentimes, especially in our northern territories, in the Yukon, there's a socioeconomic discrepancy, which also plays into account when it comes to gender-based violence and femicide. So this is important to look at when we're looking at numbers of where and the geographical patterns that gender-based violence accounts for.
When we were having the webinar, we also talked about how in a lot of places, people don't trust in the police services. They just don't. And they know that it's very likely that even if they do report what's happening, nothing is going to be done about it. So that is also, I think, a big factor in how these numbers skew the way they do in some ways, because there's also obviously a lot less trust in police services in some parts of the country than there are in.
And also a lot of our Indigenous communities are coming from those northern parts of Canada and rural parts of Canada, which again, going back to the murdered, missing and Indigenous women, we also have to take into account the intersectionality that's there as well, especially in Canada. And then this next graph that we are sharing and looking at numbers from is about the age distribution of victims. So the average age of victims that is being reported on is 42 years old. And here's an excerpt from our webinar on gender-based violence, where our executive director, Nita Geer, provides some more information on the age distribution of victims.
If you look at the stats for university-aged women, it's staggering. But because it's they might have known this person, you know, they might have seen them in class, or they might have accepted a beer from them at the pub or something like that. They were not taken seriously. So the reports, so they, A, they don't report because they don't get believed. B, they don't report because they're ashamed, they're embarrassed. There is all the stigma that goes with it. So women in that sort of average of 42, there's likely children. And because of the children, there is a report because either the school is reporting or daycare is reporting. So against a woman, you know, like they would report from other sources. So it reflects a little bit more reflectively, but it doesn't mean that age-wise that they're more at risk. I mean, I think statistically, young women are more at risk because of dating, like the whole dating process. So very interesting. Very interesting.
Which again goes back to your whole point about the police and taking people seriously when they're coming to them with concerns. Mm-hmm. The youngest has been less than a year old, and our oldest is up to 97 years old. So you're looking at a very broad range of ages. It really can happen to anyone. And we were speaking yesterday at the webinar about it was surprising to see that the average age of victims was a bit older, 42 years of age, which we are thinking could be due to the fact that young women, A, either aren't reporting it, or B, aren't being taken seriously about it. There, of course, is that hysterical woman stereotype that we often comes up in media, and police often don't take women seriously. I think a lot of women too lean on their instinct, which is often right, but we're told that instinct isn't enough oftentimes. So I think those go unreported often. Also, if we're looking at the victim-accused relationship, so who's perpetrating the gender-based violence, it is strangers are only 9% of the reported. 51% are a current or former intimate partner, 24% is a family member, 10% is a friend or acquaintance, and 6% is other. And then going on to race and ethnicity, which is based on information available for only 53% of victims, so there's data here that we're not seeing. 64% are racialized victims or Indigenous victims. So if we break that up, it's 28% for racialized victims and 36% for Indigenous victims, and white victims are 35%. So again, we have to look at the intersectionality here, and then also comparing as much information as we can as seeing here, this is only information available for 53% of victims.
And again, the information that Caitlin and I are looking at is coming from a report that's called hashtag call it femicide 2018 to 2022 report. So these numbers are only looking at that specific time frame, which I do think is an important time frame to look at because it covers COVID, or at least a large chunk of COVID. And I think we all have heard in some ways how COVID made intimate partner violence and gender-based violence really come into the spotlight again, because people had nowhere to go. They had no way to get out of the home. They were trapped in these situations. Even if they wanted to leave, they oftentimes couldn't. And it really brought back into light the seriousness of gender-based violence and intimate partner violence. But we will share a link, yes, to the overall report in the show notes. Fair warning, it is a very large, very detailed report, so please only look at it if you are in the right headspace for it. And yeah, it has a lot of really valuable information in it. So now that we've kind of covered a lot of the nitty-gritty details and some of the harder-to-hear information, we're going to talk a little bit about what we can do if someone tells you that they are experiencing abuse or gender-based violence, ways that we can offer support. So first and foremost, you're going to want to focus on the person that is being hurt. Your role, the first thing you want to do is support them. Make sure you are not putting your own anger, shock, sadness, or fear first in the conversation. I think especially when we consider that most perpetrators of gender-based violence are partners or people in a partner, like an intimate partner relationship, most often those people also have relationship with the victim's family and friends. And so it might be really shocking to hear from someone for the first time, hey, my partner treated me in this way. But no matter what, no matter how shocked you are, no matter how angry you may be, you need to set your own emotions aside and focus on the person who's actually being hurt. You need to remember that everyone copes with abuse differently. They might do things differently than you would, and that's okay. You need to be there to support them as they explore what works for them. Listen to what they're saying to you and let them lead. Instead of telling them what you would do or what they should do, ask how you can best support them and validate them constantly. Make sure they know that you believe them and you are there for them and that they can trust you. Always be judgment-free. Instead of saying things like, well, what did you do? How did you make them mad? Why don't you leave? Or, hey, you chose this relationship, or you know that they don't like it when you do that, which none of which would be helpful. You can say things like, it's not your fault, no matter what, no matter how many times they get angry at you for this thing, it is not your fault. You can say, I am here for you. You can ask, how are you doing right now? You can say, what is one thing that we can do in this moment that is going to help you in some way? Always be patient and open-minded. Abusive relationships are complicated, scary, confusing, and traumatic, often with many traumas layered one on top of the other. Very seldom is someone going to leave a relationship after just one incident. More likely, it will be after many incidents, big and small. So there are going to be a lot of layers there, and figuring things out takes time. You might need to have more conversations with this person. Don't push. There's no one right answer, no quick fix. And again, everyone deals with these things differently. You can refer them to relevant support services if they would like help. And that's something that you can pretty easily Google search your nearest victim services, your nearest women's shelters or men's shelters if the person you're supporting is a male. There are a lot of really great resources online to help you find support. The Canadian Women's Foundation has a really great list of national resources. Those are all just places to start, and hopefully once you start looking, more and more will come available. Just a reiteration though, you cannot ever make someone use these services. They're only going to use them when they're ready to, and all you can do is tell them, hey, I'm here when you're ready. Like, you let me know and I'm going to be your ride, your getaway car, whatever they need. Yeah, as much as it can be frustrating when it takes longer than you think it should, you are not the one in the relationship and you cannot make the call, as much as that is really hard sometimes. again, some things that are going to be helpful are things like those encouraging responses. Paraphrasing in your conversations is going to be key to making sure that you're understanding what you're hearing. So it sounds like you're feeling this, or I'm hearing that you would like to do this, and really make sure that their own feelings and wants are clear and that you are not making any choices for them. Asking clarifying questions is always a good thing. If it seems like they're having a hard time answering open-ended questions like, how can I help you? Try asking them closed-ended questions instead, like, can I call this specific service for you? Or can I give you a ride to a place that you are safe? Do you have a safe space for tonight? Asking those yes and no answer questions can make it a little bit easier to move through conversations like this. Again, it's not your job to solve the problem, but you can give them the tools to get out of the situation themselves. Always use empowering language. Always let them know that you believe them. Always let them know that the way they are feeling makes sense and that it's fair if it's a really overwhelming situation. And just, yes, be very clear. Asking, how can I support you right now? So in our show notes, we'll add that bigger report that we already talked about, as well as a couple additional resources that you can check out if you would like them. One of which is the National Support Resource List from the Canadian Women's Foundation. We also have some information from Ontario STANDS, Standing Together Against Gender-Based Violence, now through Decisive Actions, Prevention, Empowerment, and Supports, which is a program that the Government of Ontario has just rolled out. And we also are going to put in a link to our own blog post from March, which was talking about International Women's Day from a few different perspectives, including just some discussion about gender-based violence.
And I think the Celebrating International Women's Day blog posts will be a bit of a more of a lighter read if this felt heavy for you. There's some nice poetry in there and other resources as well, not specifically to gender-based violence, but women in general and building communities. And I think that's something that I believe we both took away yesterday, was standing together as women and as just people building communities so we can help support each other in every way that we can.
So hopefully the information that we shared today, while heavy, was also helpful. Hopefully it gave you some understanding of why this is something that we should be talking about and some good places to find support if you need it. As always, our member centers are also a very great resource if you or someone you know are experiencing gender-based violence. At the very least, they will have a really good understanding of the resources that are in the area, and they will be a listening ear if you need one. Even if it is that you have someone in your life that isn't ready to accept help and you're feeling frustrated about that, call your local support line. They will absolutely be able to empathize with you and give you an ear to vent anything that you need to vent about the situation. I would definitely suggest that you check out who your closest center is. And if you need support in that, you can visit our website and look at our locations page. So Caitlin, thank you for having this conversation with me today. And I hope that all of our listeners will join us again next week.
Thank you, Caitlin.